This is Conquering Columbus.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is your co-host, Mike, here. And today we've got a great episode lined up for you. Josh and I got the chance to sit down with a friend of ours, Callan Harrington. And Callan has an extensive career in enterprise sales, as well as sales leadership. And today he runs his own consulting firm, Flash Growth. Early on in the show, we spent a lot of time talking about Callan's early career and how taking some risks early on and putting yourself in positions where you need to learn quickly can lead to big rewards.
Now, I had no B2B experience. I had no contacts. I was going straight into an enterprise sale. And they're like, well, do you have a lot of contacts? My buddy's like, well, just tell them you do, and then I'll help you out as much as I can. So I did, got the job, and I'll never forget this. They're like, okay, we're going to send you a conference. And I had no idea what I was doing. I read the book, How to Master Trade Show Marketing. And I just did exactly what it said to the T. We crushed that conference. I'm like, all right, I think I can do this. But the only reason that I did that is I had so much fear and imposter syndrome that they hired the wrong guy and was like, I'm just going to do whatever the hell I need to do to figure this out.
Later, Callan spoke about some advice for early entrepreneurs, especially when you find early success.
I can't tell you, like, when things were going really well, I can't tell you how badly I wanted to sweep the balance sheet and take that money, like being 100% honest. And I didn't do it. I reinvested a decent amount and saved a decent amount in cash. And if that wouldn't be the case, you know, I would be way more stressed out. I'd probably be stressed out to the point where it's like, how are we going to operate this? How can I even think about investing for growth? So I made that mistake early, corrected it quickly. So I was fortunate there.
We wrap up the show talking about Callan's own podcast, Decision Point, and the value of podcasts as a business tool.
Tim Ferriss says it, 9 times out of 10, I'm doing it the next day. But he had the advice and he said, if you're going to do a podcast, only do it if you can get value out of doing it and you never get a single listener. So for me, my original intention was to do it for content-based networking. That's where it started. What was wild that I couldn't believe is that I just started getting introductions to people really fast and really easily. Although I was going into it with this purpose of building relationships, what I didn't expect was those relationships were deeper than I anticipated right out of the gate. Right after doing that interview, if I send them kind of an email on something or have a question, like they respond back very quickly. I've already driven more business from the podcast than I have in any of my LinkedIn posting.
Josh and I had a ton of fun chatting with Callan, and I am sure you're going to get a ton of value out of this interview as well. As always, thanks so much for tuning in and supporting the show. That's it for me. Let's dive into the interview. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is your co-host, Mike, here, and we got Josh over there, not in the booth. I didn't say in the booth this time. Really tried hard not to. How you doing, Josh?
Doing good. Do people do think we have a legit booth? We try to make it There's sound no like you walk in and everything's professional and we actually own the building. We're not even supposed to be here.
It's a large conference room at my day job, but we make it work, and we've been making it work for a long time.
It is funny. Some people, like you know now being in here, I don't know if you've been here previously.
Mm-hmm. I've been here a few times, but I will say if I didn't, I'm like, man, this is a pretty legit setup.
Yeah, people walk in, they're like, this is all for the podcast. We're like, dude, we're killing it.
Yeah, podcast. We're rolling in the dough.
We got a couple of big raises. We don't really know how we're ever going to get income.
We raised it.
We've been raising money like crazy.
I mean, back in like 2000 and what was it? 2000, when did we start the podcast? 2016?
15, I think.
I mean, you could raise money with any idea. You could literally, like, we're never going to make revenue, but I'm going to raise a Series A because the money was just flowing.
You just keep it all in Silicon Valley Bank and You keep rolling.
No comment.
Maybe
no comment on that.
Too soon.
We're going to move on from that one because that's making me cringe a little bit already. I don't need to talk about SVB any more than I already have. But that voice you're hearing is a voice of a friend of the show, Callan Harrington. So Callan's joining us today. He's the CEO and founder of Flash Growth. And like I mentioned, he's a friend we've known for a while, but we're excited to have him on the show today to discuss his latest venture, Flash Growth. Many early stage companies stagnate due to a lack of knowledge about unlocking the next level of growth. That can result from a lot of things, strategy, process, infrastructure, or other reasons. But Flash Growth is a sales and RevOps consulting company that helps startups and scale-ups unlock their next level of growth by creating, implementing, and executing proven go-to-market plans for rapid growth. Callan's had a ton of sales leadership experience at places like Smart Harbor, SafeChain, and Bold Penguin, including a couple of successful exits. And he is a highly active member of the Columbus startup community. So we're really excited to have him on today to discuss Flash Growth and everything else he has going on. Welcome to Conquering Columbus, Callan, for the second time.
Hey, I'm excited to be here. I'm super excited to be here. Yeah, I feel like if you get on this show in Columbus, you've made it, right? This is, I believe, the benchmark on whether or not you have or have not made it.
I would agree with that. You know, and Andy finally put us up on his website next to McDonald's and some of the other brands. We're basically a Fortune 500 company at this point.
It's pretty legit.
It's all that money you raised. It's all that money you raised. It makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah.
This is your second time on here? Is that what you said?
He was on here with SafeChain, right?
No, I was not on here with SafeChain.
You know what? I thought you were on with that, but it was everybody else.
You were with SafeChain at that time.
I was with SafeChain at that time.
But we've had your product people on.
She was one who used to be with Accenture. I forget her name. Really smart, nice lady. And also the head of Zwink, Rob.
Oh, Robert Zwink. You guys, Robert Zwink and...
Yep. Lily Ferhandi.
Yeah, Lily. She was very smart.
Yep.
Sorry, we're getting sidetracked already. This is going to happen a lot today,
so now that
people.
This is the first time, I want to hear about Callan's background. I don't even think I know any of this. Where did you grow up? Are you from here in Columbus?
From Toledo. Went to Ohio State in 04. And then, I'm old. Right out of the gate. So I was into the Columbus startup community really early.
Mm-hmm.
I started my career out at Northwestern Mutual in their internship program, which I still recommend people for sales to this day. They're probably the best training that you can get. Mm-hmm. But I immediately wanted to try doing this something totally different. And I wanted to, so I started, this is before InsurTech that was really around. So I started doing, I started an agency selling insurance 100% over the phone. So it was a good idea. It was way too early. I'm trying to schedule nurses all over the country to come in, take these medical exams to get life insurance in place. So I'd sell a policy. I wouldn't get paid on that for 6 months, a year, because they're just going back and forth to get all this. But I loved this insure tech. It wasn't insure tech. I thought online financial services was mm-hmm. really cool. And then I built a kind of a career throughout that and got more involved on the B2B side. And then that's when a couple of us came together to form what's now called the Shipyard. We spun a company out of that called Smart Harbor that sold to Excel KKR, a private equity company. Then I went to SafeChain for a little bit, as we mentioned, with a lot of people in the startup community in leadership positions. Came from SafeChain, was a great mm-hmm. experience. And then I was at Bold Penguin, and we grew Bold Penguin and exited Bold Penguin as well. So yeah, I've been in here for a while, then started Flash Growth.
So you're doing Northwestern Mutual. I mean, you go through the story quickly, but if we can pick it apart a little bit, I'm always interested in hearing the lengths of the journey and kind of how you made the leap, especially because your ambition and drive and everything you're doing now, so entrepreneurial, like to see how that accelerated. So you're doing Northwestern Mutual, and then are you doing the over-the-phone insurance sales at the same time, or did you branch off and do that on your own afterwards?
I had to leave. I couldn't do that there. So Northwestern Mutual, like any kind of a large company, right? You really had to buy into and essentially execute on their playbook.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a lot of liberty to go outside of that. And I would tell you, for those that fit into that mold, it's one of the best careers you can have, period. My best friend's there, and he's crushed it. And sometimes, man, I really wish I would have went that route.
Mm-hmm.
I could have had a really hard to build it to that point. But once you get it to that point, it's a little bit easier. But for me, I just wanted to do it a different way. And I had to go try that. And that's what kind of led me to do that. But I had to leave in order to do that.
And how many years did you keep doing your own thing until you realized, like, hey, look, this model is too early. It's not going to work.
It was a couple years. I mean, it was pretty evident that this return on cash was just going to be really hard to do. And at the time, insuranceagents.com was growing pretty crazy, and they ended up getting purchased by Bankrate. So I was partnered with a company called insuranceagents.com, which, if you're in the Columbus area, that was one of the early ones within the startup space. We were 24 on the Inc. 5000. And I say all the time, you know, the oldest person there at that time was, I think the CEO was 28, 29. So we were, it was just weird as part of this super high growth thing, having way too much fun. And then they started to bring in more experienced people. And I just learned a ton. And then, so at that point they had sold. Bankrate didn't have a need for this division that was this life insurance agency. And they're like, well, especially since it didn't cash flow anything, it was a horrible investment on their side.
Mm-hmm.
So then we shut it down.
And you go from there to starting Shipyard right after that?
Not after the Shipyard. So we, right before Shipyard, I was with a company called Agent Cubed. And so this is kind of an interesting story. This was my switch from B2C to B2B.
Mm-hmm.
When I knew I still loved this whole online financial services space, and I would tell you the funny thing is, it was between doing that or I was going to move to New York City to try to get into trading, because that's where I was like, okay, I wanted to be in New York, but I also really like this thing. Mm-hmm. What this thing is, I don't know what this thing is yet. FinTech had been around, but really this digital type of kind of the insurance space was different. So a buddy of mine from insuranceagents.com said, hey, I know a company that's looking for kind of that first sales hire. So this company called Agent Cubed, they were a CRM platform for really large insurance carriers, large insurance brokerages to execute on this direct-to-consumer, selling over the phone, inside sales model. Because traditionally, insurance is very face-to-face, just like what I was doing at Northwestern Mutual. And I had made this change. So now I was going to work with these much larger organizations to be able to do that. Now, I had no B2B experience. I had no contacts. I was going straight into an enterprise sale. And they're like, well, do you have a lot of contacts? My buddy's like, well, just tell them you do, and then I'll help you out as much as I can. So I did, got the job. And I'll never forget this. The first, they're like, okay, we're going to send you a conference. And I had no idea what I was doing. I read the book, How to Master Trade Show Marketing. And I read that and I just did exactly what it said to the T. We crushed that conference. I'm like, all right, I think I can do this. But the only reason that I did that is I had so much fear and imposter syndrome that they hired the wrong guy and was like, I'm just going to do whatever the hell I need to do to figure this out.
And then Shipyard.
Yeah. We sold that. That company sold to National General. And then I could either have moved to Boise, Idaho, where it was located, but another—
Which actually sounds like a crap move until you realize that Boise, Idaho, I think is actually a pretty awesome place. I didn't realize it's like a mountain outdoor type. I thought Boise, Idaho was just potato fields.
Everything that you just said is 100% accurate. Unless you go, like, I remember the first time going in there, I'm like, this is not what I expected. This is totally different.
What's funny about that is that I bet you people in Boise, Idaho have the exact same thoughts about Columbus.
Except they're right.
Yeah.
It's like, why don't come here? It's like...
Oh, there's like no question about it. First time I went to Boise, I was like, this is pretty cool, but I just didn't have a desire. I didn't really want to move out west. I was interested in moving east, but I didn't really want to move out west. And
very different vibe.
It's a very, very different vibe. And, you know, Ilya Bodner, I think you guys have had on the show. Mm-hmm. We knew each other well from insuranceagents.com and he kept talking about, you know, this thing, which was to become the Shipyard. And we had talked about wanting to join together and Ben Clark and a number of other people. So then finally I was like, all right, timing's working out well for this. Let's come on and do it and figure it out. And then we had rebranded and pulled a couple of companies together and formed the Shipyard.
The Shipyard was all centered around digital marketing for agents or agencies.
The Shipyard, originally, yes, but it was really distributed sales channels. So what I mean by that was, you know, if you think about it, with an insurance carrier, the insurance carrier has the product, but agents go out and sell this. If you think of a franchise company, right? So McDonald's makes the product, but all the franchisees are the ones that are out there selling it. So what we stumbled upon was we can work with the manufacturer or the main parent company to create these marketing programs for all of these individual brick and mortar or local field agencies or businesses. So that was really what our key was. Now, we found this niche in professional services, I would say financial services as a whole, but Nationwide was a big client. We're like, okay, let's come on here and see if we can't repeat this with a bunch of other different insurance carriers. And that's what I was brought on to do. When I first joined, I led enterprise sales.
How long were you there before you ended up moving on? Or before it was sold? Because you left when it was sold?
We spun Smart Harbor out of the Shipyard. But between the two of those, I was there for a little over 5 years. You know, that's an eternity in the startup space. And then, yeah, we ended up selling it.
Towards the end of that, before you jumped into this, we were coming to these little sales leadership meetings. And you kind of mentioned a couple times, like, maybe I'm going to go do my own thing, right? And you kept mentioning, like, starting your own agency, doing something. I guess what I'm curious about is what made you actually decide, you know what, now is the time with Flash Growth? And was Flash Growth like the original thing you were thinking about back then, or did that come later?
So I just kept taking the next kind of good opportunity after good opportunity. The whole time I've wanted to start a business from as long as I can remember, period. Mm-hmm. But every single time, the next good opportunity would come around, I'd get super excited about it and I'd go do it. But that whole time, like I can't say, like, you know, I really liked the people that I worked with. I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed building. I enjoyed leading. Like, those things were things that stuck. But I can't say, like, this was my ultimate passion. Like, my passion was not just to kind of rise up the ranks as fast as I possibly can and just get to CEO. I knew I wanted to build something. And for me, after Bold Penguin had exited, and the same thing, we were talking about this earlier, mm-hmm. and the same thing happened where I've been very lucky to be a part of these companies and to experience that. When you do exit a company, you get recruiters reaching out to you left and right. And I got a lot of that after Bold Penguin exited. And that was right at the height of the Great Resignation and everything else. All these like ridiculous offers mm-hmm. and opportunities are coming my way. But I was like, wait, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to go. I'm going to take an opportunity. I'm going to put myself, like, it doesn't matter if you're doing your own company or you're working for one of those companies, you're going to go hard. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, you can't do it. There's no other way to do it within those types of companies that are growing that fast. So for me, I was like, if I keep doing this, I would never do this because one thing will lead to another. I'll keep going down this. So I was like, all right, I'm just quitting without having anything. Mm-hmm. There's no company started. I've tried to build on the side. I burned myself out and failed at that every single time that I tried.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm just going to quit. And when I quit, and I gave Bold Penguin a 90-day notice and then left without having any contracts, any ideas. Like, I'm just going to start doing, I can't say any ideas. I had a couple areas that I wanted to do. I was going to get a couple consulting agreements mm-hmm. and use that to self-fund an insurtech or a SaaS company. And then I was like, okay, this is what I need to do. And I'm just going to figure this out. So it was more like, I'm not good at going from the shallow end and walking my way to the deep end. I have to be pushed into the deep end and just figure it out.
And so do you still have plans to build that insurtech or SaaS company, or have you found something different that you thought maybe not what you expected to enjoy?
I won't rule it out, but mm-hmm. that's not my goal. What ended up happening was once I was very clear, people ask me this all the time, like, you know, if they want to get in, like the people that want to get into consulting or something like that, like, you know, what advice would you have? And I say, be very clear that you're doing that. Because I tried to consult when I was at these other companies, but I was like, yeah, I'm thinking about doing some consulting on the side. Well, nobody really knows what to do with that, right? It's hard to refer to somebody else if you're saying, if you don't even really, you don't even have any confidence that you're even planning on doing that. Like, why would you refer that person? Mm-hmm. But once I made it clear, this is what I'm doing,
yeah.
people are like, oh, I've got somebody you should talk to. And then deals just, it was kind of like shooting fish in a barrel, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of this was, you know, this was in 2021, 2022, where, you know, that could happen. And what I found was I just really enjoyed doing the work. So I'm like, I'm going to follow, instead of following, you know, this opportunity presenting itself, what do I actually enjoy doing? What gives me energy? What actually, like, do I like doing this work or not? And follow mm-hmm. that instead. And that's what I started doing.
Yeah. I mean, that it makes a ton of sense, right? So talk to us about, like, what is the company today? What do you do for people? How do you engage with people? What does that look like?
Companies come to us for three different reasons. One, it's a really early stage company, and the founder's really the one that's leading the sales charge. So coaching and advising that founder through that process, and that usually until they kind of transition and they hire those first couple sales reps, and then that could move into a different type of engagement, which brings us to the second one. The second one is somebody has good product market fit, but they don't know how to take that to the next stage. You really kind of think about that 1 million to 10 million stage. So we have this in place. What do we need to do? Building the playbook, building the process, all those different things in order mm-hmm. to scale a company. And then the third one is a later stage. And a good example of this would be private equity company has portfolio companies that they have. Something's broke and they don't know what it is. They want us to come in, assess it, assess the situation, and fix whatever that problem is. And we do that on two sides. We have our revenue consulting side. That's your customer success, sales. Sales mm-hmm. is obviously probably the biggest part. Marketing, looking at all of that. And then we have that on we have our rev ops side as well. So building out Salesforce, building out HubSpot, tying all the systems together. And, you know, the way that I look at that is like when we're done, it should be that example of first time you got in a luxury car, right? Mm-hmm. First time you get in there, and you go 80 miles an hour, it feels like you're going 40, like that's what it is. You're getting twice that production with the same amount of effort.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes a ton of sense. So I imagine a lot of people coming to you like, hey, we're not getting the data we need, or this is broken, connection won't work. You know, all those types of things on that side of the business. But, you know, I'm curious, as you've kind of scaled that, have you focused on in the enterprise space since that's where you've kind of come from historically with your background, or are you working with kind of all fields?
So as far as like, do we focus on people
who focus on enterprise? Yeah.
Yeah. SMB, no, I mean, I've done just, funny enough, I've done just as much SMB. I just done a lot of, when I was an individual contributor, I did a good amount of enterprise, but SMB, enterprise, we really cover the gamut. I would say the big pieces, I don't really do any B2C. I had my taste of B2C, realized that was not for me, and I just love the B2B side so much more.
Yeah. What were the biggest challenges for you getting this off the ground and running and keeping it going?
Ooh.
Because keeping it going is the hard part, I think.
Oh, man. How much, you said we're not, there's no hard stop today?
No hard stop. We got plenty of time.
Okay. So a couple of the mistakes that I made, and you know, I've said this before too, where I've read every startup book going into this. Mm-hmm. Lean Startup, all the ones that you can think of, I've read. And I was like, I'm not going to make all those mistakes. Well, I made every single one of those mistakes. But I think the two big ones that I would say I had to correct really fast was, one, operating from a cash flow forecast as opposed to a P&L. P&L can look great, but especially if you're in a service business, what cash you have on the bank, especially in that early stage, right, where you're not taking any bootstrapped company, right? Mm-hmm. What operating off of that makes a big difference. And then also, you know, making sure that you have enough cash to get you through a tough situation. This is a great example. I can't tell you, like, when things were going really well, I can't tell you how badly I wanted to sweep the balance sheet and take that money, like being 100% honest. And I didn't do it. I reinvested a decent amount and saved a decent amount in cash. And if that wouldn't be the case, you know, I would be way more stressed out. I'd probably be stressed out to the point where it's like, how are we going to operate this? How can I even think about investing for growth? So I made that mistake early, corrected it quickly. So I was fortunate there. And the other thing I'd say is, just not taking your foot off the gas from a new business perspective. And I did that. That was probably the one that had me the most concerned was, as I mentioned, it was really kind of shooting fish in the barrel. And then it got to the point, I'm like, okay, I've got a lot of, I can't take on anything more. And instead, you know, I would have done, it's like, okay, well, who can I get to help me with this? Who can help with delivery on this? And I had that to an extent, but in hindsight, I would have spent more time recruiting in order to find more people to help deliver this, spent more time into building the processes to have other people, like to be able to teach other people how to deliver this. And I didn't. And, you know, we hit a slow patch and I was like, oh man, this is going to be tough to get this thing cranking again. And like I said, I've been a revenue leader for almost 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I still made the number one mistake that kept me up night for the past 15 years at these companies, and that's new pipeline.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes a ton of sense.
Hey, everybody. Mike here. We're going to take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors, One Columbus. And we are very excited to partner with One Columbus. They really, really share the same vision as us here at the Conquering Columbus podcast, which is really building up the Columbus region to be one of the most prosperous regions in the United States. And One Columbus serves as the business location resource for companies across Central Ohio and around the world as those companies grow, innovate, and compete within the global economy. And they help us lead a regional growth strategy that develops and attracts the world's most competitive of companies, grows a highly adaptive workforce, and prepares our communities for the future, inspiring innovation across the board. Their mission really is just ensuring the Columbus region is a vibrant place to build businesses and careers. So again, we really appreciate all of their support. You want to learn more about them, go check out their website, columbusregion.com. That's columbusregion.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back into the episode.
You ran into something, a couple of things that I heard you mention, right? One of them that we hear all the time is like cash, right? Realizing the cash flow is so important early on in a business. But the second one is running into the, hey, the founder is the bottleneck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so common.
How have things changed? How big are you now? And how have you managed to then start creating a pipeline that isn't dependent on you? Or are you still in that process where it is kind of being held up by what you're doing?
So I would say I started doing what I tell any kind of executive leader, you have to recruit all the time. So I just started recruiting people that could deliver this, right? And so, you know, going from one to two kind of trusted contractors to 10, 15, where if things, I don't know what happened at the beginning of the year, but I don't know if it was the marketing kind of finally taking shape or just beginning of the year planning, whatever it may be, but just got a ton of new leads in. And I was more prepared for that. Now it's an interesting market, right? Sales cycles are just taking longer across the board.
Yep.
But now I feel fully confident. You know, as these new ones have came in, I feel very confident. I've been very confident in the delivery of them.
So how big is the team today?
No FTEs. I didn't, I which is funny, I was right before we were going into October, I was going to flip a couple full time. And thank God I didn't, because that's when everything really slowed down. So we stayed as contractors and it worked really well. So quite honestly, I will keep this in with contractors until we really feel confident that we're kind of out of the situation that we're in. But I'll tell you this as well. I don't know that I have a desire to build something great. And what I mean by that is great does not necessarily mean big in my eyes. And before, this is totally counter. You guys probably remember sitting in this room that we're in today, like this is not the same. This is not the exact same viewpoint that I had before. I wanted to build something as big as possible and sell it. And I thought that that's all that mattered. But now I care 10 times more about doing something that I feel gives me that energy every single day. Not saying you're not going to have hard times, right? It's not like, of course you are, but produces really, really, really high quality work. And this does not have to be a giant thing in order to do this. If you ever heard of the book Small Giants, it's a good example of that. And that's something that, again, you guys probably hearing that are probably like, I've never heard you talk
it's a little
like
different,
that.
A little different perspective coming from you.
100%.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. So, I want to get into the podcast you're doing as well, but I'm going to hold off. I'm going to kind of, let's wrap this section up and just talk about like, where do you see, because you mentioned, right, hey, not bringing in any FTEs until we get out of this current market we're in. But what I'm curious about is like, have you thought about long-term what you want to do with that? Are you, hey, I'm going to keep this going and just kind of go with the flow and take the opportunities that I enjoy and make sure we're putting out quality work? Or are you thinking long-term, like, where do you want to build this into?
Two areas that I really like. 9 times out of 10, just knowing myself, it's going, and I'm already evaluating these, productizing the service and then building a SaaS company out of that. Most likely it'll go that route. But until that point, one of the things that I've fallen in love with is, as you guys know, was we're kind of talking about the podcast and the content creation and all of that. That was a world I would have never even thought about prior. Like, I'm so grateful I even got into a service business, because that's really how you market and sell a service business. I don't think I would have ever touched that if that wasn't the case. And that has been one of the most passionate pieces for me, where a lot of this is, as I continue to grow this, I want to have a head of delivery, which are some people that I've had these conversations with, have a head of delivery that's really responsible for, you know, creating the service, mapping that service, delivering on that service, productizing that, and then building that for the long term, and ideally in kind of a SaaS company, while I'm kind of working on, okay, here's where we're going next, and then building this content side. That side, I would have just, again, I would have never guessed would have been that fun, but I've absolutely loved that side of it.
And what about in terms of future service offerings? Like, are you going to continue to focus on a lot of the consulting work and the stuff that kind of is dependent upon your knowledge and your skill set? Or do you see it, the ability for you to pull yourself out of that? And like you said, I mean, the RevOps, I can see how you productize that, but I think it's more difficult for the process and the playbooks, right? So how do you scale that version of the service offering?
It's a great question. And those couple areas, those I'm already pretty largely removed from. The RevOps, for the kind of the obvious thing, is I'm not a technical person. If you said, Kellen, go build this custom workflow in HubSpot or build this flow in Salesforce, I can't do it. So I've been fortunate to work with really, 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 really strong technical people setting up, for when it comes to kind of like, here's what we need to look through. Here's our audit process and how we understand this, right? So there's people that are better at doing that today than me that I bring in that have been doing this for years to go in and do this. But that same process is exactly what we do on the what's called the go-to-market or revenue side. So looking at, what is their go-to-market plan? How are they positioned? What's their buyer's journey look like? What does their sales messaging look like? What does their sales process look like? What are those sales stages? What does their team look like? What's their design? What are their comp plans? What does all this thing look like? I've built the frameworks for all of these. So when somebody kind of comes to us, they've got a unique situation, but we're taking them through that process. Those fundamentals are all largely the same. So the reality is, though, I have to use people, and we'll always do this. Again, kind of gets back to that. I want to build something great is people that have a ton of experience that really know this space. And again, I'm always looking for people that are better than I am at being able to do that. So it doesn't have to be built around me. So a lot of that I'm already out of, fortunately.
So then circling to the podcast after that, like how did that spark about, and how have you found, like, what we've realized and kind of seen with others is that it's very hard to take an audience and grow it from a podcast, but you can take an audience and put it over onto the podcast and attract a portion of it. Sounds like it's kind of been flipped for you. Maybe it's because you're mixing the mediums, you're cutting up your content, and you're putting on LinkedIn, things like that. How has the growth been, and has it been driving new business?
So here's why you bring up such a good point. And Tim Ferriss had this advice. I don't know if it originated from him or not, but Tim Ferriss says it 9 times out of 10, I'm doing it the next day.
Yeah.
But he had the advice, and he said, if you're going to do a podcast, only do it if you can get value out of doing it and you never get a single listener.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, my original intention was to do it for content-based networking, where I could bring my dream clients on here. I can bring people that are connected to my dream clients on the podcast. And that's kind of my way of building these relationships. That's where it started. What was wild that I couldn't believe is that I just started getting introductions to people really fast and really easily. What I didn't expect was that, although I was going into it with this purpose of building relationships, what I didn't expect was, like, those relationships were deeper than I anticipated right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Right after doing that interview, if I send them kind of an email on something or have a question, like, they respond back very quickly. And to your point, I've already driven more business from the podcast than I have in any of my LinkedIn posting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying, and that's not saying, you know, don't do LinkedIn posting, but those two serve, in my opinion, very different purposes.
Yeah, agreed. I think that, you know, with the podcast thing, it's you know, the old networking advice, when you go to a networking event, it's always, what should you do? Well, ask a lot of questions about the other person. They're always going to remember you well if you ask and seem interested about them. I think a big part of the podcast, right? Like, you spend an hour sitting there talking to somebody and asking them questions and genuinely being curious about who they are and what they're doing. That builds a relationship, a super high value relationship that people underestimate the value of a podcast. I'll just say that, in terms of as a networking tool and an ability to build those relationships. Agreed 100%. As you think about the podcast and kind of how you continue to evolve that content. So I'm trying to figure out how I want to word this question, because it's kind of hard to think about. But what I'm thinking about is, like, is that value of the podcast and the stuff you're doing tied to your current business? Or do you see that as something like let's say you did something completely different, pivoted, right? Do you think you could still continue to build the value of that podcast and grow it? Or would you have to make a pivot?
Ooh, good question. So if I'm understanding the question is...
Because I'm not. I have no idea what he just asked.
So what I'm saying is, right, like because the podcast and kind of what you talk about right on the podcast is relevant to Flash Growth and your current business, and you're using it as a networking tool and building from there, right? Let's say you sell Flash Growth and you go on to do something else. You think you'd drop the podcast at that point? You think you'd pivot in a different direction? Like, does it have value on its own for you?
Yeah. And that's why I thought that's what you may have been asking.
Yeah. Bad wording. My fault.
The podcast today, we've had some, you know, we've had a couple CROs on there, but largely it's founders, CEOs, mm-hmm. and just executives in general. That could be a chief product officer. It could be, you know, a CTO that's on there. It, so much so that I've debated, like, do I even put this on the Flash Growth site? Do I spin this out separately? You know, it kind of gets back to that thing of, like, I really just follow. Like, what is actually exciting to me? Because that's one thing. You can't do a podcast consistently if you're not excited about doing it. Mm-hmm. You can't post on LinkedIn if you're not excited about doing it. You can't post on Twitter. You can't do any of these channels if you don't actually enjoy doing them. You can do them for a little bit, but that's a grind. And then if it's going to be that big of a grind, why? I'll just go back to taking a job. You know what I mean? So I talk about this, like, with improv comedy versus stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
So improv was something I'll do for life. Stand-up, I love stand-up. I love doing stand-up. Will I do that for life? I don't know, because there's a lot more work going on. Podcasting, I'll do that for life. Like, that's kind of that parallel to me.
Yeah. If any of you heard that in our past few episodes, Josh has a little alarm thing that goes off on his phone and he literally can't turn it off. It's tied to a security system and it won't let him mute it.
Nobody heard it. We could have just let it slide. Nobody's heard it in the last
episodes. Like, 7 or 8 episodes. I don't know how good Andy is. Hopefully Andy's pretty good.
Anytime somebody walks into my backyard, it sends, like, a critical alert thing. Well, they let my dog out every day at 7, and she's just like a bullet that just goes back and forth. So it's like diddling, diddling, diddling. And it just goes off every time. Normally, we're done with these interviews by 7, but Mike asks fucking crazy, confusing questions that our guests can't understand. And now this thing's rambling on forever.
Here we are. So until you clarified that, when you're like, well, it only does it if somebody's in my backyard. Like, how are you so casually comfortable with someone just jumping in your backyard?
Because it's the timing. That household, so Josh and Jenna are two best friends in the world. Josh and Jenna, though, they will, like, Josh has a calendar set to the minute, and I'm pretty sure he's probably just forced Jenna into the same structure. And so 7 o'clock, it's time to let Ezra out. Guaranteed.
It's funny, though, is sometimes it'll say, it gives you the difference between like a person, a vehicle, and maybe one other thing. Uh-huh. So it'll go back there.
What does it designate Ezra as?
It calls it a vehicle every time she's back there because she's going so fast back and forth.
This thing's too fast. This is
that gone. Dog hates me, by the way. I think Josh trained her to hate me.
I'll send you a funny video after that. We got this like stuffed like mic, I guess you would call it. As like a little stuffed version mic for his 30th birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
It means me, not face. Like a microphone.
It
like,
has his face on it.
I thought you were talking about the dog. Is he a 30-year-old dog? That's ridiculous.
No. For his 30th birthday, and our dog does hate Mike. I mean, she hates everybody, but Mike in particular. And dude, she was so mad at this stuffed animal we had to keep at her house.
And
for
like it is, in her defense, this thing is a creepy looking little, it's like a doll, but it's round and it's got like almost a life-size version of my face with like a round.
Creepy and looking, identical to you from a face perspective.
Well, that's what's weird about it is like it, like you.
Anyways, we should definitely switch back to flash growth.
So going back, I think good place to kind of head towards wrapping up the show here, actually. So I want to start by talking about advice. So do you have any advice, number one, first off, for entrepreneurs, founders, folks in that, because you've done this a few times, right? So then that 1 million like product market fit stage that are stalling out, stagnating, having trouble, what's the first thing you'd look at if you were them?
If they're at 1 million and so they've got established product market fit, let's see. So, well, first I'd go back to is there a revenue leader in place or not? Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the biggest mistakes that I see this more than anything. We all know this. There's a 19-month tenure of a head of revenue, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right? And the big reason why that happens is that people, the immediate thought is, I don't want to do sales. And I get it. Sales, like, it's hard. It's very hard to do, especially pre-product market fit. So it's, I'm going to get somebody that's done this. I'm going to bring them in. Well, that is set up for failure already. So once you get to that product market fit and you've got a couple sales reps that are hitting quota, now you start to look at, okay, let's get somebody in here, right? And when you're getting somebody in there, make sure that person's a good fit for that stage. If you go out and if you're a CRM platform and you go out and you get somebody that's been at Salesforce for 15 years, right? And they're in an EVP position. It's been a long time probably since that person has seen that stage, if they've seen that stage. Mm-hmm. So making sure that you've got somebody that aligns with that stage fit. And making sure you've got a good foundation for this person to come in and build off of. So, you know, tie up those sorts of loose ends before you bring on somebody. But that's, I can't tell you. I mean, I can tell you at almost any stage, that's what ends up happening. Mm-hmm. We end up coming in after they've parted ways with whomever the revenue leader is.
Yeah. So just make sure that, you know, you're identifying the right person for the job, it sounds like, right? And that 100%. They have the experience that you're looking for. Love it. Second question is, any advice for our listeners out there who might be considering jumping into entrepreneurship, starting a podcast?
Do it. I mean, like, and I know it's kind of like a trite thing to say, but the reality is there's never going to be a perfect time ever. Mm-hmm. Here's probably one of the things that I wish I would have done differently. I wish I would not have followed everybody's advice that they said for me, right? Every single person, and the one caveat I want to say to all of this is, I do believe that all those people that gave me advice did so with the best of intentions, but I think I took that as this is exactly what I need to do until I had a mentor of mine, Shelly Stotzer, and she's just like, Kaun, what do you want to do? What interests you? Go do that. And I wish I would have done that earlier. I don't regret any of it at all. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be in the position that I'm in today if it didn't happen in the way that it did, the failures especially. But I would have followed my own gut, my own intuition more. That's probably the biggest thing I'd say, especially when you're starting a company, because everybody's going to have an opinion. Every single person's going to have an opinion, including myself. And that doesn't mean I'm right for your situation.
100%. So, Colin, I think it's a good place to head towards our last question of the show, unless, Josh, you got anything else over there?
I got nothing.
All right. Well, last on our list is a question centered around the theme of our show, which is live uncomfortably. So without telling you too much about why we chose that phrase for a show about entrepreneurs, business leaders, people who are killing it around Columbus, what do you think of when you hear it, and how does it apply to your life and career?
To me, big believer that we have to spend a lot of time out of our comfort zone. And that's where you're going to grow. And I think for me, if I'm not making mistakes, if I'm not pushing hard enough that I'm making mistakes, trying enough new things that I'm not making mistakes, I will stagnate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm somebody that is just, I cannot stand stagnation. So for me, I'm always trying to, if I read something, I almost apply that immediately. And it doesn't always work. A lot of times it doesn't, it backfires. And that's okay, because whatever I learn from that, I can move forward within the next thing. So huge believer in that.
Fantastic. Well, Colin, it's been great talking to you. It's finally having you on the show here. And it's been a lot of fun. So thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. This has been a blast.
Yeah. And Conquerors, thanks so much for tuning in. That was Colin Harrington, CEO and founder of Flash Growth. If you enjoyed that episode, you want to hear more interviews just like it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you are listening on. You'll get interviews from us every week on Mondays. We appreciate your support. We'll talk to you next week.